You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true.
Hello and welcome to episode 146 of Making Tracks, brought to you by those fine folk over at fanfortracks.com. My name's Mark, I'm one of your co-hosts, and joining me this week is the only man who managed to win a game off shuffleboard against Darth Vader and the Emperor. It's Mr. Mark Newbold! Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Wow, good grief. He bust a lung doing that one. I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. I had to practice that before we started recording so I could work out how far I needed to back off from a mic before it started to clip.
Okay.
So there you go. It was all intended and practiced and rehearsed. It didn't sound it, I know, but it was.
Sounded great.
How's your week been?
My week's been good. It's been another busy one. Lots of news to chat about and the site's ticking over nicely and we've had a few podcasts out this week. All good. In the hood. How about you?
Very well, my friend. Yeah, it's been lovely. I had a lovely day down in London yesterday with Karen. It was her birthday, so we spent the day traipsing around Camden and looking at the sights, or at least I was looking at the sights, and, you know, the sounds and the smells of Camden Town. Yeah, we went to see Hamilton in the evening. Yeah, it was good fun. And then, yeah, back on it today, doing my podcast and starting to really get my teeth into the Rebel Legion's proposal for Celebration Europe this year.
Ooh, yes. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking more about that as the months push on. Has any cool Star Wars Greeblies arrived at Casa Mulcaster this week?
Actually, Greeblies-wise, kinda, yeah. I've always had this affinity for looking at vintage cameras, and I've always wanted to try and find some reasons to buy some, like, you know the old kind of 8mm and, you know, Super 16 kind of cameras and stuff like that, you know, the home cinema ones, which they have a really nice retro feel. They have such a nice retro feel that actually, if you keep your eyes peeled in The Last Jedi, and in fact The Mandalorian, some of these cameras are getting used for, like, macro binoculars. And one of them, which is a Bell & Howe Zoomatic Director camera, is one that Poe uses when he's looking out over the sands of Crait. And I really like that. It's got a really distinctive triangular triple lens on the front. And literally, from the pictures I've seen in the film, other than maybe trying to remove a bit of branding, I wouldn't need to do anything to make it screen accurate. But as it stands at the moment, it's sat on the sideboard and it looks quite nice as it is. So I might have to get another one. Apart from that, the only other thing I really got this week was the Princess Leia Black Series comic book figure from Hasbro.
Ah, yes.
You know, this is the one from her own Marvel run, you know, when she's kind of actually in a Bespin escape flight suit kind of thing, but with black boots and the cloak and stuff. So, the, you know, soft goods cloak. That will join the collection of the comic book figures. And yeah, unfortunately, because I've spent a lot of money on somebody else's birthday, which, to be fair, I think it's totally justified, that has been it. How about yourself?
I got some really nice bits this week. I had from Mark Daniels, who does design and work for Generation Skywalker and all sorts of other stuff. He's done prints for various events. Brilliant artist, great collector. He does a range of retro style stickers and stands and sort of displays. Oh, cool. And the latest one was, remember when the final wave of Jedi figures came out and they had the, you know, the yellow sticker with the blue and red writing, you know, £1.59 sort of stuck on the front? He's done a whole selection of stickers in that style, but with different characters to the side of them. And then he's done an Empire Strikes Back era John Menzies one. They're all square.
Oh,
all that
nice
3x3 stickers. Good grief, they're nice. So I'm just trying to figure out quite where I'm going, because I'm changing the room around. So I'm moving my vintage from one side of the room to the other at the moment. Yeah. So just trying to figure out quite where I'm going to display those and put those, because they're too good just to have sort of scattered around. They need to be up and displayed somehow. So they're gorgeous. But the coolest thing I got this week, and it was just on a whim, popped into the Smith's Toys and saw the new Jazzwares Razor Crest, which is...
Yeah.
Really nice. Really nice. So I was like, I shouldn't, but I'm gonna. So I bought the Razor Crest, and they do little blind boxes. And I bought one of those, and it was Darth Maul on his little speeder. And they're all to scale, so the figures are all interchangeable. You can put them in the ships. And the Razor Crest, I mean, the back ramp comes down, the side pops off, the front, there's a front ramp at the near the cockpit. You can lift the glass on the cockpit, put the figures in, put little Grogu in on a little stand, and they're just brilliant. And normally, you know me, I don't tend to open stuff. I don't know what compelled me to open this thing. I thought, I need to see this. So, and of course, the landing gear comes out, so you can pop the landing gear back up, and I'm zooming it around the living room, like, much to the hilarity of my wife, and got it up on display upstairs, so they look fantastic. So they were the two main big things that came this week.
Those stickers sound great. You have to link us up, hook us up and get some.
Definitely. But what we need to do right now is start talking about some Star Wars news. So we've got loads to get through. So let's kick off with Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation. Landed on Disney Plus this Friday, just gone. On Making Tracks and on Fantatracks TV, we caught up with Ken Cunningham and David Chain, the director and writer of the show. What did you make of it? Because I thought it was just hilarious.
To be honest, right, I think if listeners go back and listen to the last Lego special that we talked about back, it would have been back in October last year, I think, when it was a Halloween special. I wasn't quite so keen on that one. But this one, I don't know what it was. It just worked. I just thought it was really well done. I mean, admittedly, if this was a Lego special that was going on terrestrial TV, there would have to be product placement warnings all over it, because basically the whole thing really is a promotion for the Galactic Star Cruiser and for the house, is like, for kids, I'm sure it's perfect. For the adult of me, I was just like, ooh, that's a little bit on the nose. But hey, we're going to, gloss over that. But generally, I thought the way it all worked, the stories and the way it all, the anthology kind of feel of it just worked really well. It was fun, like super fun. I mean, seeing Vader and the Emperor on the beach and all that kind of nonsense was just hilarious. And also, I think the one thing that I really liked about that is the fact that, these Lego specials pretty much at the moment are the only real thing in Star Wars that is still embracing and celebrating that sequel trilogy. Everybody else has kind of like shifted focus. You're looking at Andor and you're looking at Kenobi, which is OT era. I mean, you've got that slightly post Return of a Jedi era with Mandalorian, but actually having Rey and Poe and Finn and that together, and mixing it up again with cameos from James Arnold Taylor doing the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and thought that was awesome. So it was really fun and definitely one of the better Lego specials I've done in the last couple of years. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I loved it. As I say, we spoke to them on Making Tracks last week, and one of the questions I had was, what caught me out about this particular episode? And they've always got sweet, cute moments, because they can go there if they want it, because it's Lego, and they can do what they want. But I was surprised how sweet some of those moments were, especially near the end, the I love you, I know bit between Han and Kylo, which I thought was really just nicely picked up on. Little moments they've just tweaked and just flipped and just done clever things with. And they were pleased that that was one of the things that I picked up on, because obviously the Emperor Vader, like you just mentioned, when they first put that in place, I think they said it was Michael Price, one of the former Simpsons writers, really found that relationship between those two. And it works great. It always worked great in Family Guy, and it's one of those relationships that is just fun, but they've really nailed it here. The performances are just so good. It made me smile because Ken Cunningham used the phrase canon adjacent, which I know is a phrase I've heard you use before. It's a good way of saying, we kind of want it to feel like Star Wars, and we don't want to make it too far off the beaten track. But by the same token, it sits alongside what's happening. And of course, these are Lego characters and they can do silly things and they've got their own physics and all that stuff. But it's still Star Wars. We still lean on the stuff that we know. I just thought it was really nicely played. And Gamorrean Girls, that one track was brilliant. It totally needs playing at Galaxy's Edge. And Scarif Beach Party, with Weird Al Yankovic doing the track. It's brilliant. I loved it. More of these, definitely.
Yeah, more of these. But also, I kind of got the vibe on this one that this was like the end of these kind of specials, at least with that gang, because it was like, Finn said it a few times, after the cruise, everyone's going to go off and do their own different things and stuff. So it kind of felt like it had almost like a nice kind of wrap-up ending, which actually they all tend to do, to be fair. But I kind of noticed this more than, I think, any of the others, where it just kind of felt like, this is kind of like the bonus adventure that we didn't get. Yeah. And the other thing that I really liked about the Lego special, I mean, like you said, it is canon adjacent, so how much you can read into this and take stock of it. But it's this whole doubling down on the fact that Finn is Force sensitive and he's now going to go off and find other Force sensitives, which actually is a really interesting vehicle that would work really well as, something that would move into like canon. You could see that as like a Marvel comic or something like that,
You could see it as a series. You could see it like they did Freemaker and there's characters from Freemaker turn up, but you could see that become the next sort of ongoing miniseries thing.
Yeah, exactly. And either Lego or, you know, that could work really well as a, you know, actual live action series on Disney Plus.
Wouldn't that be something, though? You know, they pull from Legends and EU, you know, and they pull from different things, and they can pull from video games, of course, because that's within the timeline. But wouldn't it be something if something in a Lego short just sparked up enough thought process of somebody to go, you know, there's nothing here that says that Finn couldn't do that. And they definitely hint at it in Rise of Skywalker. So wouldn't it be cool if they go, yeah, well, we've done this series and we got John Boyega to come back, who doesn't seem to even want to do Marvel, let alone anything else at the moment. So maybe that's unlikely in the short term, but somewhere down the road, maybe. And they go, yeah, you know, our inspiration was this crazy Lego short called Summer Vacation. Wouldn't it be cool if they did that? But why not? Because like you say, it's canon adjacent. It's all pulling from the same source.
Well, exactly. And I think that's the really cool thing, isn't it? You know, the whole thing about this kind of really works really well, isn't it? Because like you can kind of get ideas for different series and stuff like that. And definitely worth a watch, I reckon, if you haven't had a chance to see it. Go and sit down and watch it. It's an hour long, pretty much 45 minutes. But I think it's an hour that you will not regret.
Hi, this is Guy Henry, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. Enjoy.
So as we count down the days to the arrival of season one of Star Wars Andor, Tony Gilroy was speaking to the Television Critics Association on their press tour last week, and the question came up, why is K2SO not in this show? He says, from a storytelling point of view, there are multiple reasons. I would say, wait and see. It's a story we're eager to tell. It's difficult to carry an Imperial droid around with you and not draw all kinds of attention. It's a difficult piece of luggage. When we do, we'll do it in a spectacular fashion, as opposed to presenting it and ignoring it, or presenting it or hiding it, or the bad versions we would have been forced to do. So I think he's basically saying, yeah, we've got season two of the show coming up. And as they've explained before, season one is 5 years before Scarif, before Rogue One. And season two is in 3-episode batches. So presumably the first arc, if you want to call it that, will be 4 years before. The second arc, 3 years, two and one, leading up to Rogue One, bumper to bumper, as they say. So what do you make of this? Do you think it's just a question from a reporter that doesn't quite get the flow of the story? It's a valid question, of course. You think of Cassian and K2. Yeah. But given where the show starts 5 years before, Cassian's a different guy. You know, he's not gone through all the experiences that temper him to the guy that opens up Rogue One by shooting a fellow rebel agent, as he does, to protect the cause. How do you think this will play out?
Fair question. Possibly a little bit of a low-hanging question as well. But I think, obviously, one of the breakout stars of Rogue One was K2SO and Alan Tudyk's performance. It's pretty clever of Tony Gilroy, Matt. You know, they could have easily have gone in and gone, right, okay, so like the pilot is where he's going to rescue and rebuild K2SO. But then it's like, well, where do you go from there? Now you're on another buddy series, aren't you? Yeah. You've got K2 and Andor. But actually, you know, I think going back a little bit further and really seeing how Andor is going to become the rebel that we meet in Rogue One is quite interesting. It's quite brave in some respects, because a lot of people did expect K2SO to be in it, and I'm pretty sure that there was mention of him not being cast from the first season, or at least Alan not being cast from the first season, going quite a way back. But whether or not that made it onto that journalist's kind of radar, that's another matter entirely. So it's the whole risk, isn't it? It's the risk that you have with any series. You know, it's a bit like the risk you had with Solo. You know, Solo meets Chewbacca, and then he wins a Falcon, and the Falcon gets trashed, and he does a Kessel run, and it's like, how many of these things that make up Han Solo? Oh yeah, and he, you know, he shoots first against Beckett. How many of these things that make up the character that we know in A New Hope do we need to see in, you know, surely that's where the fact that you've got 12 episodes and you've got multiple seasons to show this stuff is going to kind of help bring this stuff out. It's not suddenly going to feel like you're just ticking boxes. Yeah. I've just finished the absolutely amazing Shadows of the Sith by Adam Christopher. And for the most part, like 95% of the book, I think it's amazing. And then right at the very end, I feel like they've kind of wasted some opportunities. By the end of that book, which is still 17 years out from the events of Force Awakens, and when we meet Lando in The Rise of Skywalker, Lando's basically already where he's going to be in, you know, The Rise of Skywalker. It just feels like there was missed opportunities where it could have been left, and some of these bows could have been left a little bit undone, so there could have been subsequent books. And that's kind of the same kind of process, I think, you know, and thought process behind what Tony's kind of saying, is that actually, let's not tie it all up in a nice little bow straight away. Let's also build something. And then also, you know, from a marketing perspective, season two, or the second half of season two, start seeing trailers, and there's like a couple of shots of K2, and everybody gets excited because it's K2 and stuff. It gives us something to build towards and look forward to. And I think we need to appreciate the story that we're going to get, because I don't know what's going to go on in this first season, in the first four or five episodes at least. So therefore, you kind of go, well, let's see it and then judge it on its merits for what the story is, not for what there isn't actually in that story at this point in time.
I think it reminds me a little bit of Phantom Menace, where people complained, why are we seeing this Anakin as a boy? Phantom Menace should start when the Clone Wars starts. And George was always like, no, I want to show you how this kid could get to the point where he would make a fatal decision that turns him into Darth Vader. And it's a little bit like that with Andor, that they've gone back with season one, and season one is more about, you know, the development of the character of Andor. I think season two, because it's broken into these mini arcs, will be more about build towards the balls to do Scarif and Yavin, if you want to put it that way. The broader scope of other characters coming in, Mon Mothma, and you assume that in season two you will see Tivik and you will see Dodonna and you will see some of the other characters that you saw in Rogue One that were brought in, and maybe Bail Organa and maybe other broader characters, maybe the Emperor, I don't know. You know, different characters will come into it at that point. You know, Solo, they always sign people up to do trilogies. And you look at Solo as a story and you think, was that ever the thought process, or was it always just a one-off thing? Because like you said, they laid all the classic moments that you think of Solo's past in that film. They're all in that film. Like, you laid it out, no need to repeat it, but it's all there. But with Cassian, it's not the same. It's, you know, there's things you know of him from Rogue One. There's things that he said, I've been in this war since I was 6 years old. And you feel like you're going to see sequences. Because at one point they were saying, oh, it's a 5-season show. And it's like, yeah, if you're doing 6 episodes a season, give or take.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah. But they've decided, no, actually, sod it. We're gonna put 12 episodes out for season one and 12 episodes out for season two. And Tony Gilroy says it's going to take you right to the beginning of Rogue One. Well, you think of the start of Rogue One, and it's on Lamu, isn't it, with Jyn and her parents. But that's a flashback.
Yeah.
That's a flashback to before Andor, let alone anything else. The first scene, really, chronologically in Rogue One, is Cassian and Tivik on the Rings of Khafrein. So if that's where we're going to be dropped off, if that's the way to put it, you know, maybe the final scene of episode 24, season two of Andor, is Cassian turning up at the Ring of Khafrein. It's like, oh my goodness, that's where Rogue One started. So they've got loads of scope to get the character in the place he needs to be the guy that shoots Tivik in the back, because can't risk him being captured, can't risk him blurting out information about these plans they're trying to find. It's all worth it. So going back to K2SO, yeah, I'm sure we'll see him in season two. I think you're right. I think it was said that, no, he's not in season one, but he will be in there at some point. And what a great reveal. What a great thing to bring into the show. Yeah. That's going to hook. This week in Star Wars, we'll be talking about it. And StarWars.com, we'll be talking about it, you know, and it'll be on socials. And like it is these days when, wow, Therm Scissor Punch was all anybody could seemingly talk about for a month back when Solo came out. And then you've never heard Therm Scissor Punch mentioned since, but he was...
Until this podcast.
Exactly. I would die for Therm Scissor Punch. He's the greatest character in Star Wars, and people losing their minds over Therm Scissor Punch, and it's like, I'm amazed I can remember his name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be something like that. People will go flip out and go loopy for K2SO until another character turns up. Season one, it looks like B2, the droid, is going to be the one that captures people's attention, because that looks really cool.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
One of the key characters from Jedi Fallen Order and the forthcoming Survivor is Cal Kestis, played by Cameron Monaghan. The game went over gangbusters. It sold tens of millions of copies, hugely popular, and a fantastic and huge following online. Cameron, speaking to Screen Rant recently, was asked whether or not there was any interest or any potential for bringing the character from Pixels to live action. And he very succinctly gave this answer. All he said was, well, of course there's interest. That's about all I can say. And then he laughed. So, Mark, what do you make of this? Do you think there's scope? There's definitely scope. It's a daft question, but do you think there's scope to bring Cal into the storyline, especially where the story is set with everything else that's going on around it? They've cast an actor. That sounds stupid, but they've cast a working actor, a guy who's out there. He's on the promotional trail here for an indie thriller called Paradise Highway. So he's out there promoting live-action work. They've picked the right guy if they want to turn him into a live-action character. Can you see that happening?
Anything is possible in this series, and I suppose it all comes down to how they think the character comes over with the wider audience. Okay, granted, computer gaming it is not a niche thing by any stretch of imagination, but I don't know. I mean, it's whether or not the character's got enough legs, shall we say, to support its own series. I mean, it would be quite interesting. And actually, I tell you what would be quite cool. And this will be something maybe that we can talk about in about 5 years' time and kind of talk about how they've missed an opportunity. Mm-hmm. You've got Kenobi series and you've got Andor all set at the same time. Now you slide in something like a Cal Kestis series, and then you've got a pre-OT crossover potential for, you know, for streaming series, which would be quite fantastic. And you think, actually, something like the Cal Kestis series could, at least based on what we kind of see in Jedi Fallen Order, resonate really well with the Kenobi series. It's, you know, got a very similar kind of vibe and stuff like that. And I think it would be a way also to kind of expand that Kenobi series going off onto the hidden paths and stuff like that. The game itself, Jedi Fallen Order, yeah, the story was great. It wasn't really the kind of game you could, once you completed, you really wanted to go back and replay, to be honest, because there wasn't really much in it to kind of give you that. Once you kind of done the story, that was it, really. I would be up for seeing Cameron actually step onto the live action screen, be it small or big, and realise his character. Because I think actually, as the character was depicted in the first Jedi Fallen Order, I thought he was a really well-rounded, engaging character. If it's not happening, let's push it a little bit. Come on, Disney, let's get behind it and do something with it.
Yeah, I think there's a logic as well to, because they want this shared universe of storytelling in different arenas, to bring a character from a game across to live action seems like something that, if it hasn't happened yet, it will happen to a large degree, because, you know, the talk here is of a series. And we know that Lucasfilm are looking at loads of options, of course. You think back a few years when that whole raft of things, you know, Acolyte got mentioned, Lando, Droid Tales, all the things that got mentioned, and you wonder how many are actually going to come to fruition. Already we've lost Rangers of the New Republic for various reasons, but things happen like this and don't always come through. But games cost as much to make as movies, probably bring in as much money as movies do. So they're huge business. I just think if you've got a character like, let's say, Cal Kestis, and you bring him into, maybe he debuts in another show first before he gets his own arena to tell his own stories in with his own sort of supporting cast, let's say.
Ahsoka.
Yeah, maybe. Bring him in and he's there as a character. When the next game comes out, when Survivor comes out, or maybe the one after that, let's say, and they do these DLCs, like these updates, that can add new locations into the game, that can add new options into the game, unify and tie up and smartly schedule all these things. So the week that Cal Kestis live action Cameron Monaghan turns up in the show, let's say Ahsoka, for example, that's when they do the update to the game, and that's just going to draw all the attention to the game. I think Lucasfilm at the moment's in a very good position in the sense of they've got a show like This Week in Star Wars, or things like the Star Wars show. They've got StarWars.com. They've got all these different places that if they schedule it right, can shine a light on a character on your computer screen in the game, but also that week on your television screens on Disney Plus, if they could make it happen with Hasbro and the figure comes out. But you know what I'm getting at? You know, there's all these options that can make these things massive events. And I think bringing a character from computer realm into live action would be a huge event.
I mean, I suppose that's what it comes down to, isn't it? I suppose the thing really is computer games and the characters that they create. Do they have any intention to exist outside of the computer game products? Or are they now looking at stuff for every single character that gets created? Are they looking at how can they then get ported into, you know, live action or into like an animation or even into like Galaxy's Edge or, you know, Star Cruiser? Basically, it will come down to the traction the characters then get from various different fan communities and stuff. If you see like Cal Kestis cosplays at Celebration, then you know it's landed pretty well with the fans.
Hi, this is Julie Dolan, the voice of Princess Leia, and you're listening to Fanthatrax. It's your only hope.
Back in July at Olympia in London, London Film and Comic Con had the Star Wars Zone, and in the Star Wars Zone was a number of actors, including, well, briefly, she went upstairs because she needed the room because the queue was so big, Lauren Mary Kim. You'll know Lauren as the stunt double for Ahsoka in the final episodes of the Clone Wars Season 7. She's also doubled for a lot of actors in Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian doing stunt work. We had the chance to sit down with her for a few minutes to talk all about her Star Wars experiences. So this is Fanthatrax and Lauren Mary Kim in the Star Wars Zone at London Film and Comic Con. How was your first trip
Is it? Oh, I'm making assumptions here. Is it your first trip to London?
No, I've been here a couple times already.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is probably the fastest trip I've ever been to London. I flew in Saturday night and I worked all day today at the convention, and then I'm leaving tonight back to Italy.
Oh wow! I don't envy you that at all. So have you enjoyed the show? Has it been fun?
Yes, everyone's so pleasant, and the Star Wars fans are the best. They're the best fans in the world.
And the weather. You can't expect this weather when you come to the UK. Glorious sun.
Oh my God, it's the best. Because you always think of London as foggy and cold, but this has been amazing. I love it.
So people will know you, and I'm looking at Ahsoka right now. Was Ahsoka the first Star Wars project you were involved with? I know you've done stuff since, but was she the first?
No, I think I worked on a Kinect, video game a long time ago. I can't even remember the names, but I did Star Wars motion capture for that years ago.
Now, if you're talking Star Wars Kinect, the most infamous moment in Star Wars Kinect, apart from the Rancor bashing around Tatooine, which I'm assuming you weren't the double for the Rancor,
no,
was there's a dance sequence.
Oh.
Everybody talks about this Han Solo dance sequence. Were you involved in the dance sequence?
I was not, although I wish I were now. Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
So how did life turn that Ahsoka came your way?
I just got a call one day from someone from Lucasfilm, and they said, you have to sign an NDA. Yeah. So, and I'm like, okay. And then they told me about the project, and then they offered me the job. And then they're like, you're going to be working with Rave Park one-on-one. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And we got to choreograph our sides of the fight. And we did that in a couple days. And then they flew us to Lucasfilm in San Francisco. And then we did the motion capture there.
And what was it like? Ray's known for his skills. But the choreography part of it, you two are sort of mapping out the moves, working out how it was going to go. How interesting was that?
Oh, it was super fun and creative, because as a stunt performer, you don't usually always get to make up your own choreography.
Yeah, yeah,
so the fact that they allowed us to do that was really special.
Yeah.
It's just something, especially for such a beloved character.
Absolutely. So, totally. I mean, we've been watching the crowds. You were downstairs and you were upstairs. And the crowds were silly because Ahsoka.
Right, yeah.
How do you feel being part of that legacy? Because that's a whole thing in and of itself, being part of the Ahsoka legacy.
I am in awe that I am even a part of it, because it's just so special. And I'm very appreciative of Dave Filoni for trusting me. And it's just been such an amazing experience, the whole thing. Because literally, I had no idea the fans were so lovely and huge. Just so many of them.
Yeah. And you mentioned Dave Filoni. You came back for The Mandalorian and did more work. Explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I got to double Emily Swallow on the fight scene on end of season one, where I fight all the stormtroopers. And then season two, I got to do even more. I got to double Fennec. I got to double Koska Reeves, the Magistrate. Yeah, it's been quite a journey.
That's amazing, because so many people... Well, one, so many people wouldn't know that. And two, just to have I'm saying small, it's not small, it's big, because these are women of action and you're doing the action. So to have a piece in those characters, that's fascinating. That must be amazing.
Yeah, I feel very honored, honestly, because it's just like a dream come true.
And what's ahead for you in the future?
Well, I'm working on a movie in Italy right now. And if you guys could see me, I have a black eye. I took a punch reaction, which I didn't get hit by the punch, but when I took the reaction, I hit my face against a table edge.
Oh.
So I have a nice little purple bruise for everyone to see, but luckily you can't see it.
Yeah,
so.
Podcast. You don't want to see it.
Yeah. I'm wearing a nice little hat to cover it up, but yeah.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Perfectly fitting for a stunt.
Oh, yeah. So it kind of goes. It's a story behind it.
It does.
With their picture, with everyone.
It's always got to be a story.
It's got to be a story.
It's wonderful. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you
so much.
Lovely
to meet you, and we'll speak again soon.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. So my mate Lee Hawker has sent in a listener's question. So thank you very much. And I promise you, I didn't have to twist his arm too hard for him to do it. And the question is, Mark. Hi dudes, after watching the recent trailer of Andor, which I thought looked great, and seeing Mon Mothma in the Imperial Senate, I wondered if we may see Palpatine again. I can imagine Ian McDiarmid doing the Obi-Wan cameo and Andor cameo in the same day. What do you think?
Well, it makes sense. And there is a precedent, isn't there? When they were doing Revenge of the Sith and they went back and did the Emperor hologram scene from Empire Strikes Back, Ian McDiarmid went back and shot that, and Hayden... when they were doing, I think he was doing the scene with Yoda when they were meditating in the Jedi Temple. It was the same day that that Hayden went and shot the Force Ghost scene from the end of Return of the Jedi. So having actors in the right costume and taking them to another stage to film other stuff, there's definitely a big time precedent for that in Star Wars. So yes, you did see that scene in Obi-Wan Kenobi with the Emperor, which still baffles me. And I'll be amazed if they don't go back and change it, because he looks exactly like he did in Rise of Skywalker. Whereas Ian McDiarmid now is in his 70s, and he filmed Jedi when he was in his 30s and had all the makeup on. And Rise of Skywalker version of Palpatine and the Return of the Jedi version of Palpatine look nothing like each other. He looks more like, you know, when you see Sidious in Phantom Menace, when it's just Palpatine with the hood over and nothing's happened to his face. He looks more like that than the, you know, the scarred version that we know so well. So that struck me as a really odd decision to show Palpatine looking like he does in Rise of Skywalker, as opposed to how he would have looked at that time. And it would make sense that if they've got McDiarmid there and that's the look they've decided to go with, which again seems weird, and they want to do a cameo in Andor, be it a hologram sequence, so to just pepper him in would be great. And if they're going to do it, yeah, film it on the same day, makes all the sense in the world. Do I think we'll see him? Wouldn't it be cool to see Palpatine, Emperor Palpatine, in the Senate? I don't know whether or not he would have even bothered going to the Senate. You know, that whole preamble in the original novel was basically he locks himself away and it's people like Vader go out and his viziers go and do the speaking for him. You know what I mean? So whether you would see Palpatine in the Senate, I don't know, but I think you will see him in some form or fashion. What do you think?
It all makes fairly logical sense what you're saying about, going back to Lee's question, having Ian McDiarmid do all the bits he needs to do in one day, because to be honest, it's probably not a huge amount of work. And also trying to fit in and around his other work, it's probably easier just to schedule something for maybe 1 or 2 days in a block than come back in 4 months' time or something else. Also, I think one thing we started to see from the costume clubs, and it's starting to kind of get a little bit complicated judging costumes, is the fact that the use of sequel trilogy era costume components are creeping in. And I wonder if it's just the fact that they still had the prosthetics that they used in Rise of Skywalker. That's why he looked how he did. And it was just like one of those things of, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a slip, a little bit like the whole AK-47 usage in the Andor trailer map the other day. It's just like one of those things whereby, yes, it's TV and it means smaller budgets, but also it's faster timescales. So it might not necessarily mean that they've actually got the time to actually go and recreate the Emperor from the correct era. And they kind of thought, well, you know, it's a hologram, it does weird things, so that's how it is. But coming back to your question, Mr. Neubold, I think it'd be fantastic. I do quite like the idea for Andor more than I think any of these other series that we've got. The overbearing kind of shroud of the Emperor should be felt in the Imperial Senate. You know, I'm thinking maybe potentially more like a Howard Hughes kind of like, he's locked himself away, doesn't actually really need to see anybody. He has, like you said, his imperial hands who go out and they start to spread the will of the Emperor. You know, this is a series where the Emperor's presence should be felt more than I think any of the others, really. Mm. We're not on the Outer Rim, we're in Coruscant, in the heart of Imperial Center. So that is where the Emperor and the Empire is working. And so therefore you feel like that is kind of where he needs to be seen and or felt. So hopefully it's not a cameo. Maybe he's in several episodes.
I still think, and we've talked about it before on the show, I'd love to see a project, preferably live action, but however they'd want to do it, where you see corridors of power and you see how, especially Palpatine, how he manipulated and figured his way to the top as a politician. Because know more about how he made it as a Sith than he did as a politician. And he couldn't just Sith his way to the top by using the dark side all the time. He had to become a charismatic, compelling leader. We saw the manipulation of the Trade Federation and how he moved all the pieces to make Naboo happen, and that all played to his advantage. So we get that, but that would have been happening all around. But once he's in the seat of power after Revenge of the Sith, like you say, you've got 19 years up till A New Hope, and we don't see him in A New Hope. We don't see him till Empire. We don't really see him till Jedi. There's all these other things, moments where you could pepper it in. And you see the speech in Bad Batch, for example. Bad Batch season one, I'll go back to because we've got season two coming fairly soon, was brilliant in showing the change in the galaxy. You know, how starports were changing, personal identification was changing, you had to carry certain things. Yeah. It was very locked down, and there's a bureaucracy starting to come into play. And it feels like Andor, you see ISB agents, you're going to start seeing the bureaucracy, because that's something that gets mentioned a lot in A New Hope. People say there's no politics in Star Wars. It's all over A New Hope. You know, the politics of the Senate, how he locks things down, we know that Senate gets shut down during the events of A New Hope. So the Senate room that I didn't expect to see again after Revenge of the Sith, it remains. It'll be interesting to see how many aliens are in that Senate compared to how it was in Phantom Menace era. But in terms of Palpatine, it feels like, I think we'll probably see Vader to some form or fashion in Andor because they are the top tier bad guy leaders. So if you're going to see the Emperor, it's probably more than likely going to be in relation to something that's happening with Vader. But nevertheless, wouldn't it be cool if the Emperor did come into that Senate chamber or if there was a convening of prominent people and Palpatine's there? My gut tells me we all make suppositions. We all made a lot of suppositions about Obi-Wan. And then that show came out and, and worked to a degree that didn't break what you thought you knew, but worked really well in its own as its own thing. It's the same assumption. Oh, Obi-Wan just sat in the desert for 20 years, twiddling his thumbs, playing Tetris, waiting for Luke to go up, you know. But in reality, he was actually doing other things we now know. And it could be the same with Palpatine. Oh, the Emperor locked himself away. And his, you know, his bureaucrats did all the work for him. Maybe he was, and probably was, more involved in the process of building and sustaining the Empire than maybe we realised. And hopefully Andor could be one of the first places where you see that happen.
I mean, to be honest, personally, anyway, I, you know, not really given a huge amount of thought about what the Emperor did or didn't do in that time period. But it could be one of those things that maybe we start to see why he starts to hide himself away a little bit more. Maybe, for example, there could be attempts on his life and that actually he's thinking, well, I don't actually need to get out. I don't need to go and kind of have to deal with these kind of low level kind of like, you know, senators and politicians. And I've got other people who can work for me and do all that kind of stuff. I can just stay here and cultivate my Sithiness and see what's going on with Lord Vader. You know, especially after Kenobi, I'm wide open for anything that's going to happen in these series. You know, there's no point trying to cling to the assumptions that we've made for and have kept for the last 40 years, because I think it's all up for grabs now and it can all be changed. And as long as it's changed and it's done in a way that kind of feels authentic and feels justified, then I'm game. Okay, well, that's really all we have got time for today. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you to Lee Hawker for sending in that cracking question. So Mark, if the listeners want to be like Lee and send in a listener's question, comment, thought or theory, how can they do it?
If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTrax.com or check out the free...
It's magic, no.
FanthaTrax app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. Very tuneful. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTrax.com. Like Mark says, send in your questions like we have just done with Lee's question. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTrax, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube. And check out FanthaTrax Radio on Fridays at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom of Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, and Cannon Fodder. And that's me done for this episode.
Brilliant. Thank you for that, my friend. We will be back next week. And until then, stay safe, take care, buy lots of Star Wars, support your independent toy retailer, and of course, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTrax Radio, it's The Fantha from Down Under.